These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you've got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon, Chicago. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you for joining us. Well, the market's going completely crazy, and we're going to check in with John Najarian, contributor at CNBC's Halftime Report, co-founder of Najarian Family Office. Hey, John, nice to have you back.
Lovely to be back on with you. Thank you.
So, crazy market today. What's going on out there? Where do you see the, I mean, there's a lot of good news out there. There's good news from Boeing and there's good news from China. What else?
Yeah, the news, at least so far, I don't mean to correct you. It's not really from China, but apparently President Trump tweeted out that he's had some positive conversations with Xi Jinping and they're going to meet at the G20, which was not a certainty until today. That they would even attempt to have some sort of a meeting face-to-face. So that's good news. You're absolutely right about that. The other parts are that the USMCA, that's the replacement to NAFTA. Mm-hmm. I think this is not getting nearly enough play, but the Mexican deputy finance minister said that will be ratified in Mexico today. And the U.S. is, of course, having hearings today with Representative Lighthizer, who's more or less one of the head trade negotiators. He has been before the Senate today. And the reason that that's so big is that USMCA, that's Canada and Mexico with the U.S. to replace NAFTA, is almost 60% bigger than China is as trade partners when you look it up.
And they're on our border, which is even better for some kinds of industries, yes?
Exactly, because with China, you're not really shipping things back and forth. But with Canada and Mexico, we do that multiple times, whether it's something for automobiles or something with textiles and so forth and turning them into upholstery and finished furniture and so forth. There's a lot of stuff that goes back and forth across the borders. So that's a really good bit of news for the U.S., for a whole bunch of farmers and for a bunch of auto workers. So I think that's helping drive the market significantly today.
Let me ask you, though, John, because when things go back and forth over borders, that's when tariffs kick in, right? So how would that affect this? Or have we now exempted all things going back and forth with Canada and Mexico?
Well, if USMCA gets passed, we will have virtually exempted everything now that Mexico has apparently agreed to the president's issues with immigration and unrestricted immigration at our southern, if he had the same problem with Canada, threatened them with the tariffs for that reason. But if this indeed gets ratified over the next little bit by the Congress, I think this would be a real positive for the U.S.
It also seemed to me that as a positive for the market today, at least a calming effect, maybe this is a little drug everybody can take, Kudlow said that the White House is not considering demoting Federal Chair Jerome Powell, who we all know is the chair of the Fed at the moment, that they were not considering demoting him. Is that a calming sort of salve for everybody on Wall Street as well?
I guess it is. It was really unclear to most of us, even when they vehemently disagree with each other, that the president had much authority to do much with Chairman Powell. Once he is, of course, the chairman, I don't know that the president really has much power over him. But as with a lot of things, the president might think that he does, and maybe just the threat of that and the removal of that threat, at least according to Mr. Kudlow, would be a positive thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a positive thing for those of us who think having a steady Fed that's non-political is a good idea.
Yes.
Last story that I wanted to bring up today. So Facebook is also making a lot of news today with its new cryptocurrency called Libra.
Exactly. This is a game changer, truly a game changer, because they have a bunch of e-commerce platforms, including PayPal, that have signed on to do deals with them, and, of course, Uber, so that literally you might be able to use your Facebook-linked account at some point in the future, not today, but to basically pay for things, either ads you see on Facebook and or even Uber rides and so forth. So this could be a real game changer. And it's certainly, it's a private blockchain. It's not a distributed ledger in the way that Bitcoin is, where a bunch of disparate users basically ratify and verify that the coins have not been used prior. But this one certainly should be very secure because of the way it's set up. And with 2.5 billion users of Facebook's various properties, this could be a huge deal for digital assets.
You know, so call me old-fashioned, but it seems to me that this really enables a gray market economy, a black market economy, and a whole lot of evil stuff that needs to find ways to pass money. We've just seen Facebook just get hit over and over again with accusations of aiding, you know, problems with our elections, problem with elections all over the world. Is this actually a good thing, though, for the world as it is?
I believe it is, and here's why. I've lectured extensively on cryptocurrencies and digital assets overseas. At times, I've done that with FBI agents who have been questioned about, well, isn't it all dark money? Don't people buy drugs with these digital assets and so forth? And the FBI agents have said, I hope they do, because they said, as secure as it is, it also leaves a digital trail that we can follow. It's much easier to follow than cash. They will tell you that it is 100-to-1 cash versus digital assets as far as nefarious practices, because, of course, cash, other than marked bills, is almost impossible to trace, whereas digital assets always leave a footprint. You just have to make one little mistake, like happened with the guy running Silk Road, the Amazon.com of drugs. He made one little mistake, and they got him and shut down the whole operation.
Well, it'll be certainly interesting to see where it all lands. John, we'll let you go back because I'm sure you've got a very busy day with the markets, but thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Thank you. Have a great one.
It's 12:22 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink of Best Money Moves and ThinkLink.com, filling in for Steve this week. Housing, as you know, is near and dear to my heart, and it's really interesting to see what's going on with Amazon's move into the Washington, D.C. area. So the Washington Post just ran a story and looked at the HQ2 housing price spike, which is sort of hard to say, but really, really important because it looks at, you know, we were hoping, of course, this would happen here in Chicago. We've invited Patricia Sullivan. She's a reporter at The Washington Post, wrote the story, to come on and talk a little bit about it today. Patricia, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be in the ears of Chicagoans.
Well, I am happy to have you here as well. So looking at it and you know, look, from the real estate reporter's point of view, which is sort of always going to be my take, the average prices have really jumped since Amazon announced its HQ2 was moving to Virginia, Northern Virginia, the D.C. area. Tell us a little bit about this new study and what you're seeing happen in terms of local home prices.
Well, ever since November, when the HQ2 arrival was announced, we have seen prices going up in the short term. Like immediately, a bunch of apartment houses boosted their rental prices. It was a little slower to start with, you know, housing prices. You know, buying and selling single family houses, condos, townhouses, that sort of thing. But now we're starting to see asking prices going up about 7% immediately in Arlington County, which is just across the Potomac from Washington, D.C. So, and in nearby areas in Northern Virginia, going up anywhere between 6-7 all the way up to 11%. And remember, this is just as Amazon is starting to open some of its offices right now. The bulk of the Amazon employees don't arrive or don't start working for them for another 2 or 3 years.
All right. Well, so just to give everybody in Chicago a little bit of a perspective, prices weren't cheap before they showed up. You know, before they got there, the average price in May was $713,000 for a single home price, correct?
That is right. This is an expensive area, and Arlington in particular is one of the most expensive housing markets in the world, in the country, really. It's not easy to buy a house there, and it's getting harder and harder for people who are just starting out or people who are trying to move from a less expensive area into Northern Virginia.
So I've spent quite a bit of time in the D.C. area, and I have family that live there, and it's been interesting to watch what's going on in Fairfax County, and particularly along the, I know you guys don't like your metro system so much, and it's undergoing extensive repairs, and we feel for us with the L over here. But, it's interesting to note how at every single juncture, they're now changing zoning laws. They're putting up high-end rental buildings so that people, because those are, of course, easier to finance than condos. And it seems like there's just not nearly enough homes for people to live in.
Well, we love our metro. We just wish it would work better.
Got it.
And you're absolutely right. The housing that is going up now, the new housing that's being built, is almost all targeted to high-income people simply because the cost of land is so high. So a developer, puts up a building and, given the choice of, making it affordable or making it, something with a high return on investment, he or she will obviously turn to, luxury rentals or luxury condo sales. I'm sorry, I forgot your question.
Well, really, it was about the commentary of how communities are starting to cope with this massive need, both for affordable housing, and by affordable, we mean something that somebody's making $25 or $30 an hour, which is, huge.
Relative
to what some people live on in this country, but how they're actually going to build affordable housing when the focus is on these very high-end condos, and to lesser extent condos, but a greater extent, these fabulous, amenity-laden rentals that seem to be going up at every single train metro stop.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. And that has been a crisis in the Washington area now for 15 years at least. The number of affordable rental units has dropped immediately in the Northern Virginia area by 80 to 90% since the year 2000. It is really impossible for someone starting out, even with what would normally be a middle-income job, someone making, say, $60,000 a year. It's almost impossible for that person alone to finance a new house or a new nice condo. What saves people is dual-income households or their willingness to live in the outer suburbs and commute, long distances. The problem with affordable housing, of course, is the only way to reasonably build it in a high-income area like this one is to get subsidies. And frankly, there's not enough government money or foundation money to help cover the cost of the amount of affordable housing that's needed.
It sounds like it sounds like D.C. is actually starting to turn into San Francisco Jr. But we really appreciate you stopping by and filling us in, Patricia. I got to tell you, there's a lot of people in Chicago who wish we had this problem, given that we have lots of housing that is far more affordable than it should be. Patricia Sullivan, reporter at The Washington Post, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can find me at thinklink.com or link into me. Why not? This is all about business to business, right? We have Philip Weiss, president of Safeworth Shaw at Work, joining us on the phone today to talk about sports betting at work. And how is anybody going to navigate that, just as we're all coming to terms with how we're going to navigate jewels and marijuana at work. Philip, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Elise. Good to be here again.
It's good to have you. So, talk to me a little bit about this. We've got, sports betting and, it's coming to Chicago. And I think that there are probably a lot of HR people out there going, now what am I going to do with this?
Yeah, you couldn't have quoted them more accurately, Elise. It's really, this is sort of a banner year for nettlesome and really irritating issues, at least from the perspective of business owners who aren't ready and HR professionals. And sports betting in Illinois is just a prime example of that. We've been getting a lot of calls, not only in the last week or two since this sports betting bill was sent to the governor for his expected signature, but in the last few months as the bill's been debated, because people in leadership positions who've dealt with other workplace distractions, including employees who develop things like issues like gambling habits, are particularly concerned. So there's a lot of questions and a lot of worry.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I don't think that any of the people in my office have a gambling problem, but I do know employees at other companies who have gambling problems who, you know, would rather spend all night, you know, gambling somewhere, and then they turn up to work maybe at 9:30 and they've had no sleep and they haven't had a shower, and you're like, hey, are you ready to work or what? Not sure how this feeds into that.
Yeah, your description tracks with a lot of what we get calls regarding, and some of those sort of visual, observable features you described are the exact warning signs that we have been talking to clients about in anticipation of this law getting passed. Not to say that you're going to have millions of people engaging in sports betting right out of the gate, so to speak, partly because a lot of the revenue, a lot of the activity when these laws have been passed in other states has been online, on smartphones, et cetera. And that's going to take a little while to ramp up for a number of reasons in Illinois. But everyone is still concerned. We're getting calls that sound a little bit frantic because of what people have seen in the past. And one of the requests we're getting, just to your point, Elise, is what do we look for? What are the warning signs that somebody's actually getting in over their head? And it can be, just as you said, somebody looks like they haven't slept. Somebody's got suddenly erratic changes in mood. Somebody's borrowing money from coworkers or asking for even an advance on their salary. It's really interesting to see how quickly some people get caught up in something like sports betting, because, you know, sports talk, you know, talking about the odds, the point spread, that's already part of conversation in the workplace for many people every day. For that to make that one leap, that one step into a sports betting passion or a real issue in terms of someone's attention, it's a small step for many employees.
All right, so I just got to know, you know, we've had a great run of Guys and Dolls. Are we going to see a little lunchroom wagering going on here? Are we going to have up the betting pool amount that, you know, we bet on sports? Or are there some protections built into this law so that, you know, employers do not have to allow this sort of behavior on premises? That is the case with the marijuana law, where, you know, employers can say, listen, I understand it's legal. Don't come to work high. That it's not legal for us. Is there, and what are the procedures that you have to follow to make that work?
Yeah, that's a really important question. And the first answer is employers got to be vigilant. We've had calls to our office because employees heard somewhere on social media that sports betting is going to be legal in every place. Break rooms, lunch rooms, it's something that anybody can engage in. And then they started telling coworkers that and already planning to set up informal kind of game of the day wagering activity on college teams. So the first piece is it's going to be highly regulated. The betting itself and the offering of bets can only happen through authorized licensed entities, organizations, or sports venues that decide to get involved in this of a certain size. So there's already going to be a lot of limitations on where the betting can happen and how. But to your second question, which is really critical, there's no automatic right for employees to engage in activities that are not about doing their job, to engage in extended conversations, because obviously limited conversations can happen, but extended conversations that aren't about their work. So the first and probably the best piece of advice is really focus on when your employees look like they're getting distracted, when they're getting in these sort of large group, long time discussions about sports betting, sports team wagering, et cetera. That's a critical opportunity to intervene, intercede, before it goes too far. And we've actually worked with clients who've been creative about this. What do you say in the moment? You can't assume that these people aren't getting their work done, but you want to be proactive. And even playing off the lingo and the language of sports betting, we've had managers say, hey, I would wager that nothing's going to get done today and or we'll miss that critical deadline if you don't fast break back to your desks right now and get that job done. So even having a little bit of humor about it can make all the difference in terms of interceding before issues blossom into real risks. I'm
just going to say you're going to have to start publishing a list of puns to, you know, make sure, you know, puns for everybody in the workplace, you know, marijuana puns. And I wish I were bright enough to come up with a few for you right now, but I'm sure that you've got people there who can come up with this list and circulate it for all your clients.
Well, to your point, I'm amazed at how much employees respond to stuff that one would think would be a little silly, a little kitschy, but they get the fact that their managers are trying to get their jobs done, do it with a sense of humor. So, you know, from wager to bet, I bet nothing's going to happen unless you get the work done. I mean, you can go on and on. You're so right. We probably have to look for a glossary of betting puns that would work for managers.
All right, I'm going to go work on that right now during the upcoming commercial break. But thank you so much, Philip, for being with us. It's been always great to have you here. Philip Weiss is president at Seyfarth Shaw at Work. And where can we find you?
SeyfarthShawAtWork.com or Seyfarth at Work. Any of them can bring it up on the internet. Thank you so much.
Oh, perfect. Have a great afternoon. It is 12:44 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glank. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment after the Wintrust Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So a couple of weeks ago, undercover video was released showing workers at the Fair Oaks Farm in Northwest Indiana abusing animals. It caused a huge stir from viewers online and around the Midwest, resulting in the formation of an investigation to file charges, and one of the three suspected workers has been arrested. There have also been protests that have popped up sporadically at the Fairlife headquarters in downtown Chicago as consumers look for change. The organization has officially cut ties with the farm in Indiana, but will that be enough to satisfy consumers yearning for justice? And speaking of making things right, Boeing is still working to make the 737 MAX right for consumers after a number of concerning incidents over the last year and a half. Regulators have been keeping a close eye on the Chicago company that's updating the software, but the name could also get an update. The company's CFO, Greg Smith, is saying that they're open to dropping the MAX part of the 737 MAX name because of the negative association with it. But here's the question again, will that be enough for consumers? I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
I'm Elise Klink. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's time for Amy Guth, host of Crane's Daily Gist. And so, of course, you are watching what's going on with Boeing. And, of course, we've talked about with John Nigerian how it's affecting the market. But tell us the inside story that you're looking at.
You know, I have been so interested in this Boeing story from the jump when, you know, one crash happened. Of course, that is a lot. That's a lot of different stories.
Huge
there.
Loss.
There's a business story. There's the personal loss story. There's a lot. There's a legal story. But when that second one happened, only about 5 months later, I knew this was going to get big. And indeed, it keeps on giving. And I feel like that is just a story that keeps going and keeps going. We've seen other shoes drop where we had the whistleblowers in a South Carolina factory talking about not the 737 MAX, but a different aircraft. Just all these things have happened. There was a wing tracking slat that just about 2 weeks ago, they said, you know, the FAA said, you've only got 10 days to fix this on certain aircraft. And it just seemed like at some point you started to think, how is Boeing going to come back from this?
Exactly.
And I've long been thinking about this in terms of the cyanide Tylenol thing in the 80s, right?
Okay.
So like that became a very interesting business case study of crisis management.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, you know, however Boeing shakes out through all this, that's going to be in business textbooks for decades of how to measure through a crisis. And there is good news for a change today for Boeing, and that is IAG, which is the parent company to British Airways. They have announced that they plan to buy 200 of the 737 MAX jetliners, and that's huge for Boeing. And when all of this has been befalling them, just yesterday, the Paris Air Show was going on, and so Boeing CEO was there. and said, you know, hey, we're open to changing the name of Boeing or of the 737 MAX. Sure, let's rebrand it and call it. We're open to that. And it just seemed like that story was met in such a lukewarm way because people thought, well, yeah, but we still know what it is. We're still a little afraid of it.
It's not like you fixed the problem.
That's right.
You have to fix the problem,
that's like,
sir.
You know, your ceiling's leaking. Let's just paint it.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta fix the problem. So I think there's a lot of skepticism. A lot of leaders have been coming out and saying, hey, I would get on this plane without any fear. You know, United Airlines CEO, he came right out and said, I'm going to be on one of the first when United starts flying them again. But we are also going to listen to customers. We need customers to buy into this and feel good about being on this plane. I mean, I like to think this is going to, you know, Boeing will ride this out. We don't think of the Dreamliner in that way. And there was a time when everybody was terrified of the Dreamliner.
Yeah, but I have to say, so first, I was a little surprised that they announced such a big deal. So yeah. My first question as a business reporter is, what kind of deal did they cut to get that deal?
Absolutely.
And the second thing is, I got to say, almost every single one of those planes will have both of the two new pieces of technology. I think it's two, maybe even three. And the fixes that they're doing to make sure that those planes don't go down. That plane goes down, that's the end of Boeing.
Absolutely. I mean, they're taking a big risk, right? I mean, they got to be really confident and get consumer confidence. At this point, one misstep from Boeing that puts human lives in peril or is a fatal accident, I think that would really be very difficult to come back from that.
Yeah, I absolutely do, too. And it'll be interesting to see how they manage through this kind of sale and, you know, the discounts that undoubtedly we're going to hear about because they're going to hit the bottom line, right? So forecasts are going to be down and off or whatever. We'll wait to see what happens.
I'm really interested to see the details of this. So if the deal goes through, if it's formalized, they'll take delivery of them between 2023 and 2027. I think the terms of the deal, we might not ever really know all of it, but interesting that it comes at the Paris Air Show when we know Boeing is there trying to glad hand and make nice with everybody and save some face. So we'll see. We'll see.
All right. Well, that's a good story for this afternoon. What else are you talking about?
Well, we couldn't get through Cranes Daily just today without talking about the Wiener Circle. Good news, everybody. It's safe.
Yay.
It's all good. It's all good. So there was a question last summer. The landlord was working with a broker. And so some people thought, oh, it's going to go away. This, you know, landmark. Rest assured, everyone, you can still get your drunk late night food there. It's all good.
Char dogs. I mean, there is just nothing better than a char dog at 11 p.m.
With an insult.
Yes.
Right next to it.
Absolutely.
You know, and of course,
less calories. More filling.
That's right. The calories count differently if you eat in the middle of the night to absorb alcohol. And plus, you know, they've been so... They've done a good job of playing along with current events and topical things. I mean, they named a hot dog after Brett Kavanaugh and one after Trump and have had specials for them both. So very funny time. So, yeah, talking about that today. And then I'm going to be talking with Crane's healthcare reporter Stephanie Goldberg today. Lurie Children's and Advocate Aurora Children's hospitals have been ranked two of the best hospitals in the nation. So we have a conversation about that and what how that's measured, what that means, what that means for the hospital, what that means for consumers. That's all on the gist today.
You know, as somebody who has consumed healthcare like everybody has, you really have to appreciate that we have so many excellent resources in the Chicago area. It is a gift to the city that we have this incredible resource of hospitals, both for adults and children. And for children, there are very few resources around the country that match what we have going on here. It's nice.
It's true. And if you go to Cranes and then click through on that story, it takes you to the report. And you can really see what areas they rank so highly in that come up with this overall scorecard. It's really impressive because they're taking particular areas like cardiology and oncology and all these different things and saying, hey, this program is so excellent for children. And that's so great that we have that right here.
It really is. Well, Amy, it sounds like we're going to have another great Cranes Daily Gist. How do we find it?
You know, the best way to do it is to head to Spotify or iTunes, or you can subscribe to the afternoon newsletter from Cranes, and it gets delivered right to your email. Super easy.